damage to our economy comes from China's restrictive practices. Blame China. They've been doing this for decades.
President Trump's economic advisor pulls no punches on trade. It's Friday, April 6th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're part of the program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, aid groups send food in a bottle to North Korea. We'll meet an Afghan mine removal expert and a 12-year-old bomb survivor. And a New York company specializes in Hollywood-quality wedding videos. That's all on today's VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. I'm David Byrd in Washington. New senior White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow told reporters Thursday that China, not President Donald Trump, should be blamed for the escalating trade fight between the two countries. Speaking outside the White House, Kudlow said that newly announced tariffs against China have not been enacted yet, and he warned against jumping to what he called the worst-case scenario.
Don't forget, technically, both countries have just proposed tariffs. There's been nothing enacted. And I think that's an important point. And here in the U.S., you know, we're going to put it out for comment for a couple months. So I don't want to pinpoint a deadline. That's Bob Lighthizer's area. But I would just say it's nothing around the corner. There's going to be big discussion about it. Obviously, all the senators will weigh in, and we welcome that.
Kudlow, who heads the White House's National Economic Council, said that China's restrictive practices had been going on for decades.
I think everybody in the world knows that China has not played by the rules for many years. Europe, Latins, Japan, and so forth, they know this, and they don't like it. So here's President Trump, the first guy in decades to show some backbone on this issue and some seriousness. But the end of the rainbow... The end of the rainbow is a little pot of gold, and if you open that pot up, it says growth, investment, jobs, and wages.
On Monday, in response to earlier tariffs on steel and aluminum imposed by the Trump administration, China started tariffs of up to 25% on 128 U.S. products, including fruits, nuts, pork, wine, steel, and aluminum. Later on the same day, the U.S. Trade Representative proposed an increase of tariffs on 1,300 imported goods from China, mostly aerospace, medical, and information technology products. Less than 12 hours later, China announced it plans to impose retaliatory duties of 25% on 106 politically sensitive American goods, including soybeans, automobiles, and aircraft. But Kudlow said Thursday that President Trump has no intention of hurting any segments of the U.S. economy.
But let's not jump to worst-case conclusions. The intent of the president is to grow the American economy, not to hurt any of the sectors. And look, our farm sector has been doing great. China should give them more export opportunities. That's important. Same with NAFTA. So we're going to work and help them. We're here to help. This should not be viewed as strictly mano-mano, punitive damages, you know, that kind of thing. This got to be viewed in the context of economic growth, which is what this administration is all about.
Kudlow said the Trump administration is reaching out to other major economies to support the U.S. position. He said President Trump is building what he called a coalition of the willing to encourage trade.
Don't blame Trump. Trump is doing what everyone in the world has said we should do. He's doing what, there's like a grand coalition out there, and you'll see more on that point. So our intention is not to punish anybody. Our intention is to open markets and investments and lower barriers. That's the deal.
Meanwhile, the U.S. trade deficit rose 1.6% in February to reach nearly a 10-year high. The Commerce Department said Thursday the deficit rose to $57.6 billion, up from $56.7 billion last month. That's the biggest deficit since October of 2008. U.S. trade deficits in goods with China, Mexico, and Germany are running higher than this time last year. But that report had little effect on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up nearly 1%. While the S&P 500 rose 0.85%, markets were also higher in Europe. These are among the top Asia stories currently trending on VOAnews.com. Korea's hold preparatory talks ahead of landmark summit. Russia, China hail burgeoning ties. Bollywood star Salman Khan convicted in poaching case. Indonesians fight to keep mystical religion of Java alive. Once a hostage, Sri Lankan sailor now helps battle Somali pirates. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Humanitarian groups in South Korea are using the ocean current to send needed food and information from the outside world into impoverished regions of North Korea. VOA Seoul correspondent Brian Padden reports the activists, many of whom are North Korean defectors, hope that by floating aid across the border, it will get to those in need and not be confiscated by the repressive Kim Jong-un government.
Korean activists are sending out to sea more than messages of hope in plastic bottles. On Kangwa Island in the Yellow Sea, located just south of the inter-Korean border, humanitarian groups are launching aid packages containing rice, medicine, U.S. dollars, and news from the outside world. The ocean's current, they say, will carry the sealed bottles to cities and towns along the west coast of North Korea.
If we set the date and time right, it will get there 100%.
On one day alone, the activist group can send over 500 kilos of rice and 400 computer memory sticks full of South Korean movies and independent news that is banned in North Korea. Jung Kwon Il, a North Korean defector who recently met with U.S. President Donald Trump in the White House, has included a copy of the president's fiery speech last year at the United Nations.
Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime,
where he both threatened to destroy North Korea for its pursuit of nuclear weapons and strongly criticized the Kim Jong-un government for the widespread starvation and oppression in the country.
So the message that we are sending to them is that the U.S. president knows that you are living these harsh conditions.
United Nations reports that over 40% of the North Korean population is undernourished, and there are concerns that sanctions on exports, meant to pressure Pyongyang to give up its nuclear program, are increasing poverty and hunger in the country. The North Korean defectors involved in this unconventional aid effort have raised money and donated their time to help those most in need in the country they left behind.
It is very difficult when doing it, but after sending it, I feel proud.
Some of their support also comes from Christian churches that want to send Bibles into the communist North, where religious teaching is also highly restricted. Brian Patton, VOA News, Seoul.
We're happy you're with us on this Friday morning. I'm David Byrd in Washington. A group that monitors landmines says more than 25,000 people have been killed or injured in landmine accidents in Afghanistan since 1978. Seraj Ahmad Afghanimal, an Afghan expert on unexploded ordnance, has made it his life's mission to defuse the deadly devices before they maim and kill. But as VOA's Azizullah Popal and Zabihullah Ghazi found out, Seraj Ahmad can't save everyone from the terrible consequences of a landmine explosion. Shaista Sadat Lamin narrates their story.
This is the district center of Panjwai, west of Kandahar city. Siraj Ahmad Afghanmal is busy clearing roadside mines in a Taliban-held area recently recaptured by government forces.
It does not require a battery, charger, or anything else. When a vehicle passes over it, it explodes and causes destruction.
Afghanmal has disabled over 10,000 explosive devices. As one of his country's top demining experts, he is believed to have saved thousands of lives. Afghanmal is aware of the dangers of his job. His colleague, Bahadur Khan was killed in a mine blast 2 months ago while clearing mines in Taliban-held territory. Afanmal has survived his share of close calls, but he says a sense of patriotism motivates him. But 12-year-old Nurzia was not as lucky. Just a few hundred kilometers from where Afanmal was defusing landmines, Nurzia stepped on a landmine near her home in Nangarhar province.
It was 8 in the morning when my mother sent me out to collect twigs for cooking. I was reluctant to go on that day, but I went to get rid of boredom at home. I lost both my legs when a mine exploded.
An international charity fitted Nurzia with artificial limbs, enabling her to walk and provide support to her parents and her extended family. But she regrets she can no longer go to school, which makes her bitter towards those who plant landmines.
I asked them why they cause suffering to people. May God get angry with those who lay bombs and hurt or kill civilians.
Each day, her father helps attach her artificial limbs, one leg at a time. Nurzia dreams of being a doctor someday, but says her dreams are on hold right now. For Azizullah Popal in Kandahar and Zabihullah Ghazi in Jalalabad, Afghanistan, this is Shaista Sadatlami, VOA News.
Coming up, is that a Hollywood movie or a wedding video? Find out. You're listening to VOA Asia. As the weather starts turning warmer, wedding season is beginning to blossom, just like the flowers and trees. Now couples can have a Hollywood-quality record of their big day. As Tina Trin tells us, a New York company, Love Stories, is working to make couples, that is, from all over the world, professionally produced wedding videos.
Right now, it would be easy to think you're watching a movie trailer. There are the atmospheric scene setters, sweeping vistas, and aerial drone shots. But this is actually a wedding video.
I was thinking, this is the best content I've ever seen. It's real people, real stories, but professional production.
Rachel Silver is the founder of Love Stories TV, an online platform for watching and sharing professionally produced wedding videos.
We have thousands of wedding films from all over the world, and they've all been contributed by newlyweds or filmmakers.
So who exactly is tuning in? And is there really an audience for wedding videos of strangers?
Many of our viewers have grown up on reality TV. The Bachelor has been on television their entire lives. It's about the love story. Inevitably in a wedding film, it comes out how you met, how you fell in love. They interview the friends and the family members. So you walk away with just this overwhelming sense of joy.
Besides its entertainment value, Love Stories TV may prove helpful when it comes to wedding planning, listing the venues, florists, dressmakers, and more depicted in each video, which are searchable by location, religion, culture, and even sexual orientation. Jennifer Thompson works for a wedding videography company and says the website has helped spur business.
It's a great place for us to, you know, contribute our work, get it in front of our, you know, more potential clients.
Cynics may roll their eyes at the self-congratulatory couples, but Silver, who regrets passing up the chance to have her own wedding documented, argues that these milestone moments are rare.
All of their family and friends and the people they love the most are surrounding them, and that only happens to you a handful of times in your entire life.
All the more reason, perhaps, to preserve the moment for posterity. Or late-night binge-watching. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
And to see some of those love stories, visit our website, voanews.com. You have been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take us with you. You can find us at voanews.com. Let us hear from you, too, on VOA Asia Facebook. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jonah Cummings. And thank you. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy your day.